Welcome to the Independence by Design podcast, where we discuss what it means to be a business owner and ways to get unstuck from the day-to-day so we can design a business that gives us a life of independence. What's up, everybody? I know you're going to love today's episode because we're going to be talking about how do we assess what we're doing as a CEO and as a founder, and how do we then assess internal candidates and or external candidates to replace our job in order to actually step back and not have to think about the business all day long. Because I think there's so many obstacles mentally that people have as the founder trying to figure out, is someone else capable of taking this business to the next level, skill-wise, but also caring. So that way, if someone actually wants to step back and keep the company and the cash flow, how do we not think about the business all day long? And that is exactly why I've got Mike Vermelt on the show. He founded Keystone Executive Search decades ago and has interviewed thousands of C-level executives and CEOs. And he now merged Keystone Executive Search into Strategic Talent Partners. And Mike is going to break down his process about how this is actually possible. And I told Mike, I really think that what he and his team does is they provide hope, because it's possible to keep your company and align someone with the right culture fit and the right skill set, so that way you can actually have the peace of mind that this is possible. And again, we covered the executive pay in a previous episode. Check that out if you haven't so far. If you want to know more about Mike, check out the show notes. Otherwise, enjoy the episode. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Great, Ryan. How are you doing?
I'm super excited for this conversation. You have had a couple of things evolve since you were on the record on my last podcast. You know, for the people that are listening and that haven't stumbled across you, we'll put the two episodes that you and I have done over the last 5 years in the show notes. I'm very excited to get you into this conversation, because with the clients that I'm working with right now, you and your services are just popping up right in the process of how someone decouples themselves from the role, trying to figure out how to make their income through distributions and grow a valuable asset. And then they're like, but can anybody do it as well as I do, or bear the burden, or have all the headaches and all this stuff? And Mike, what I think about is really cool, and I want you to give it an update for the listeners, but also what we're going to dive into is the kind of the meat and potatoes of like all the, you know, all the concerns people have. I think you actually bring hope. Like, it's possible, but there has to be some hard work to be done. But I think your role and your expertise and your experience is pretty cool, because I think that's what that's what the people want, so they can buy their mental real estate back.
Well, I like bringing hope. That's great.
You just merged with another another firm, and so why don't you just give us a little bit of an update of what's been going on your end, and then we'll jump in.
Yeah, sure. So for those out there that don't know me, I had started a company and ran a company called Keystone Search for 22 years. I started in 2002. We did, you know, exclusively did C-level search work and consulting work for privately held businesses, and typically smaller and medium-sized privately held business. In April of this year, I merged my company, Keystone, with another company here out of Minneapolis called Core Talent. And Core Talent was a company that I had partnered with for many, many years and known their owner for almost 20 years. And what Core Talent does is works also with privately held companies, so similar to types of customers, but they did search work for kind of those that next couple layers down in the organization. So that director level, vice president level, even manager level in those privately held companies. And so together we took the name Strategic Talent Partners, and we are bringing that sort of full suite of leadership services to those privately held companies. We not only do the search work, but we have leadership solutions group as well that, you know, does leadership development, does assessment, because we just really believe that it's not all about putting the butts in the seats. It's about making sure that you got the right seats and you got things identified well and know who your key players are inside. And so, you know, really to grow a company, you know, you really need to focus kind of holistically on your talent. And that's really what we're trying to do with Strategic Talent Partners.
I think it's like a kind of a no-brainer from the outside going, okay, well, you're doing all the, you know, top C level and top, and then everybody goes, well, then I need other people. And as you know, it just makes a ton of sense, you know, with the fit. And, you know, you got to get you figuring out how to get you out of your spot too, so you can go do all stuff like this, right? And so and I always say, man, like your business is like when we talk about like founder dependency, I think you building a firm big enough to you can get to the point where you're having fun too. Like in recruiting is your, I mean, it's your Rolodex, right? But you've built processes, and like what I think is super cool, it's not just your Rolodex. And we can figure out, Mike, how we want to dive into this. But I think I'll tee up some of the skepticism that a lot of my clients or founders and owner operators have. And what I think is where we're going to go with this conversation is you have a process of how to assess all of this. So it's not just like, oh, these are really cool people. You guys would be a good match. Like in that, because that's, it's about having increasing the probability that the owner actually gets the ability to decouple themselves. So I think when I think about the people that I'm working with, or even myself in the past, is like, okay, so like I'm doing a lot here, you know, and like there's this whole like a lot of different, you know, if you use the EOS terms, a lot of different buckets or the roles that they fit, the spots. And then there's the, okay, there's the talent issue of like the culture fit. Then there's the visionary. Then there's the like, is someone going to mechanically understand the financial? So there's just so many spider webs that I see, Mike, that go all over the place that they almost get like confused on how would I even start to replace? Like, it's not as simple as in like, I need to replace a quarterback or I need to replace a tight end. And yes, everybody, I'm using a sports analogy. I don't know shit about sports, but I think the fascinating part about that is then when I was on a call yesterday and you and I were doing kind of our prep call, it's like everybody that I was talking to goes, yeah. And then I do it once because I found someone that I thought could be a fit. It takes them 6 months to realize it's not a fit. Then over 6 months to fire them. Then they're $150,000 into this crappy situation. And then they're backwards from their original goal of getting out of the business. And it's 12 months later. So that's a lot. But I just wanted to kind of tee up a lot of the conversation I'm having because I think you're going to be able to kind of pick this apart to figure out how do we approach this in a systematic way.
To put it into, you used EOS terms, and we're an EOS company. We work with EOS companies as well. You know, that integrator role, I think sometimes it's this, people look at it as this magic bullet. I'm just going to go out there and get this great integrator, and that's going to fix all my problems and going to take me to where I want to go and create rocket fuel and all those kind of things. But, you know, the truth is that every organization, every company is different. Every owner is different. They have different goals and where they're trying to go. They're different sizes, different industries, different strategies and what they're trying to do. And particularly in that owner bucket, not every owner wants to do the same thing. Not everybody wants to grow it to a certain size and sell it. They might want to work, you know, part-time. They might want to be chair of the board. They might just want to, you know,
be in sales and marketing.
You know, yeah. They may want to maintain some of their key clients. So every situation is different. And I just don't think there's we have processes in terms of how we look at these things, but really what those processes do is help us to understand what are the needs of that business and build the right talent to take them where they want to go.
And I think that's a great place to start because, and maybe if you want, you could do maybe a big overarch of like, okay, there's the, I don't know if you have certain phases or what your kind of material, but there's the assess phase. And then there's the question of like, is someone internally capable of doing this and like versus externally? And then like, what about the culture fit and then integration? So just kind of this journey of going from I'm thinking about this to all the way to it's worked. And I don't know if we want to put like a container around that. If not, I think that's the approach we can take. But I think, do you want to start there? Because I've got follow-up questions of what you just said, but I just didn't know how you want to put a container
sure.
on it.
Yeah, I can kind of give you an overview. And it's, again, every organization, company is a little bit different in terms of where we start in this process. But I would say one of the most key things is that you really have to understand what the owner is doing in the business today. The owner, the CEO, founder, whatever that is. And that sounds kind of trite, sounds almost silly, like what are they doing in the business today? But a lot of times with the clients that I work with and the owners that I encounter, they've been running their business for 30 years, 40 years. They do a ton of things really well, and they do a lot of things that they don't even know they're doing on a day-to-day basis. You know, they've been doing it so long. And so we start out with really wanting to understand how they're contributing, because if we're looking at they're going to go away from the business in some fashion, we need to know what we're replacing. So we have a process that we use to kind of identify what are those key activities that they're doing on a weekly basis. And we break it out into sort of functional areas. What are they spending in operations? What are they spending in finance? What are they spending in sales, marketing, so forth? And really understanding then, are they doing things in those functional areas that are really strategic? Or are they doing some of the tactical things still in those functional areas as well? So we like to go through, you know, ideally, 2-3 months of kind of sort of tracking activities to kind of, you know, to be able to extrapolate over a year. Here's how, you know, your you're contributing to the business. So we get that feel when they're going to step away, what we need to replace. Now, then we need to really look at the senior leadership team and leadership team as a whole. So, you know, a lot of times what we'll see, like I mentioned, is that, you know, the CEO or the owner might be doing some things in the sales bucket. And maybe that, you know, sales leader isn't really taking full accountability for the sales function. It might not be their fault. Maybe because the owner is spending a lot of time there that doesn't need to be spent there. But we want to make sure we kind of understand the capabilities of that leadership team. This was something that was real eye-opener for me, you know, a few years after I started Keystone, because I would come into these companies and, you know, as part of a search, we would be meeting with the whole leadership team to really understand the business. And, you know, I'd meet with the owner and they'd say, we're a $30 million business. And then I'd meet with the leadership team and I'd say, oh my gosh, you know, there's really on your leadership team, you got, you know, a finance head that's maybe capable of running a $10 million finance function. You got a sales leader that really feels more like a $15 million. And at first, you know, I was scratching my head, like, how does this even happen? How could you have a $30 million business with a $15 million team? And, you know, what I realized pretty quickly is it was that owner entrepreneur that was making up the difference, that they were really the strategic leader of each of the functional areas and were playing, you know, various roles in each of those functional areas to get them to that size. So when you start thinking about how we're going to grow this, it was kind of like they were already behind. Their team wasn't even really capable of running what they had already. So that's kind of the second phase, is to really look at that leadership team and what are their capabilities there. Now, I gave you kind of the negative side of it, but sometimes what we see too is that there's some undiscovered capabilities in that leadership team. You know, some people that can step up and do more and they just haven't been asked to or haven't been given the...
Or been muted by the...
To develop.
By the owner or the... Yep.
Yeah. So we want to understand that leadership team and how well they're functioning. And then, you know, from there, then we start, you know, looking at that potential integrator, president, chief operating officer, CEO. Sometimes if that CEO really wants to step out of the organization completely, that overall leader for the business. And then we're also looking at the cultural piece along the way as well. I mean, we want to get a really solid understanding of what are the core values of the, particularly of the owner, and how that cascades down to the core values of the overall company. You want to make sure bringing in that, you know, that president, that there's a core values fit. You also want to make sure, obviously, that they're capable of taking over what the current founder owner is leaving. But probably even more importantly than that is you want to make sure this person has the skills to grow the company, because it doesn't make sense if you want to step away from the company and just have it kind of stay where it is. You need to continue to grow the company to be able to share. You're going to want to share, you know, some of your profitability with your leadership team, with your president, and so on. And you want to, you know, obviously continue to take some nice distributions out of the organization or what have you. So I think that's, in a nutshell, kind of how we go about it. I mean, there's a lot of bullet points.
Is there like a step four of like the integration or something like that? Because I know that's kind of like almost the closing the loop. Is there any involvement, or do you have best practices? And we just kind of overarching, because what I want to do is then unpack each of these where I think people have skepticism or the things that they have questions for. We can unpack each of these kind of steps. But is there any thoughts about that integration, or like once, you know?
Yeah, certainly. Part? I mean, I think the cursory stuff is kind of what you think of as onboarding, making sure that the person comes on and kind of assimilates into the organization well. But I think of it as much more than just that. So, you know, that owner can't just hire a president and then walk away, you know, the day they start.
Yay, $200,000 gets me freedom,
yeah, exactly,
tomorrow.
Hey, I'm great, I'm done, make me lots of money, right? There has to be, a plan on how things are going to transition. And of course, anybody new coming into the organization, they're going to want to tap into that owner for, you know, all kinds of questions and getting introduced to customers and new markets and all the things that, you know, it's going to take for that president to really grow the company. So that's typically something over a year, a 2 year time frame, even, that, you know, we're kind of building that plan on how they're going to interact. And again, a lot of that comes down to kind of what that owner wants too. Sometimes what they want to do is they want to be the chair of the board. Well, let's set up an advisory board and you're going to be the chair of the board, and then you're going to, you know, formally meet every quarter, but you're also going to be on the hotline for that new president for any kind of questions and things like that. Other times it's, you know, they actually want to spend some time in the business. Maybe they want to be here in Minnesota in the business for the summer months, but they don't have anything to do with it in the wintertime. Mm-hmm. You know, so, so it really depends on what they're trying to accomplish, what they want for themselves.
So what I want to do is unpack parts of each of these phases and the some of the skepticism that people have, it, like, in order to help them see that this is a possible future. And like, the way I think about it, Mike, is like, what you do is as important, potentially more important, I would argue, than even the most sophisticated investment banker. Because like, a lot of times there's no freaking deal unless they've got a good management team and they decoupled themselves, unless they want to freaking earn out or all this other stuff that's going to ruin their potential transition of a third party sale. But it, like, this just builds a good business. It builds them the options and all that stuff. But I think about, like, okay, you know, I just interviewed Craig Rutledge again, where we talked about all the mechanics of an executive comp. So like, if, for the listeners that want to go back and like, we're not going to be talking about that. Like, we dove really deep into short-term bonuses between normalized EBITDA, working capital distributions, the, you know, base pay versus variable, and then tying people into the target cash flow equity valuation, all that. So like, let's assume we're giving you that. That's what I want to do, so that way we can then, and what I want to think about is like, and I think this kind of goes back to your starting point. And then maybe we can kind of unpack each of these and the skepticisms and the hope we can give people, which is people I find have a difficult understanding of an org chart, of what people do. And you specifically said to me yesterday, you know, there's the CEO and president. And I personally, I understand how the integrator visionary words, no pun intended, got traction. But like, I think it has provided a huge amount of dysfunction in the marketplace. I love you, Gino and Rob and everybody that's like, I just like, there is private equity firms, they've got owners, they hire a CEO or president, depending on the size of the company. And that person does exactly what the ownership goals want. Otherwise they're fired. And so right. I say like, so when I think about this, Mike, it's like a sports team has a set of seats and or set of players, and just like that company has seats, and like, people have to do what they're supposed to do so the whole organization can function to generate revenue and cash flow. And so like, I don't know if we want to start with like, here's the role of a CEO, the role of a president, and then like sales and marketing, ops and finance, and like, if how you describe it, I'd love to hear from you. What does that look like? How does that differ between sizes of companies? Because how can we go to an owner and ask them what they want if they don't know where they would map their own situation onto? Is this making some sense?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. You know, I think sometimes we get too hung up on those titles, CEO, president, what integrator, what those things mean. I mean, the top person in the organization has to be that strategic leader. And when I say strategic, I mean, this is the person that is, you know, looking at how are we going to grow this business? And what that means is, what are the markets that we sell into today? What new markets can we possibly move into? If we move into other sets of customers, other markets, what do we need to do to our products and services to make it fit for those customers? That's strategic, and you could almost say it's even almost like a strategic marketing role in some ways. It's usually
strategy, right?
Yeah, usually that's the role that the founder is playing, and that's a lot of times the role they don't even realize that they're playing in the organization. But that has to be there in that top role, whether we call it CEO, president, whatever we're calling it. And if the company's going to grow, there has to be someone who is doing that piece. A lot of times what I see is that the only person in the organization that has that capability is the owner. And in their leadership team, they have great doers, great functional people, but they're doers, not strategists. And so when it comes to finding that replacement, bringing in that president or CEO or integrator, you have to find that person that understands that strategic piece and has done it.
Yeah, it's fascinating. You and I, we have a shared couple clients, and I was talking to one of them yesterday, and we were talking about like the industry that they're in, and we were talking about how certain sectors are down. And I was like, well, you know, if you can get closer to the money printer, you can be able to have higher probability of continuing. And he was like, and so it's those things that's like, okay, where are the customers? Where, like, where, who's got the money right now? And I wonder, I mean, it's probably so tied into, like, as an owner operator, people starting just eating glass and trying to get revenue that they naturally become a strategic thinker, because it's like, they're always looking for where the dollar is. And, you know, if you haven't been forced into that, it's not, maybe not as natural. But I think there's kind of two components that I'm curious on, like, as you break down CEO versus president, Mike, is like, there's the strategy, but then, like, if I'm one of my clients or my owners right now, I'm thinking of, is like, their strategy is one thing, great, but then it's like, are they going to finance their way into debt with me? You know, and so, like, it's like the strategy plus the financial, it's two sides of the same coin that has to be extracted out of that founder's head. Am I making sense? Yeah, how does absolutely. That roll into the CEO or president?
So the CEO and president, and I'll be honest with you, to me, there's not a big difference between the two. It's just, what title do you want to use for that role? Most of the time in a smaller privately held company, you'll see that it's president, or maybe even president and CEO, president slash CEO. You know, that's the top job. I think that CEO, where you'll see a CEO and a president together, is usually going to be in a bigger company, you know, where you've got...
What size would you usually pick that?
I mean, the bigger publicly traded companies, talking, you know, close to $1 billion, where you're going to see that, where the CEO is kind of the outside person and the president's kind of the inside person. But for a small privately held company, there's just not a lot of difference. You can choose whatever title you want there. But I think it's, you know, a lot of times what we'll see is, you know, in these situations where it's an owner that's then hiring somebody from the outside to kind of take over for them, then they'll keep the CEO title for a while and name it president.
It's lip service to the outside customer.
But at the end of the day, you know, they're hiring somebody to come in and run the company. And if somebody's running the company, it's either president or CEO.
Is
how I think about it.
So, but I think it's an important nuance, because, like, you know, if someone's worried about suppliers or vendors or clients or whatever, it's like, hey, throw on the CEO title instead of just chairperson, you know, chairman or whatever. And, like, it provides a little bit of lip service to the marketplace, even though your job is way different now that you've hired another president. So I think it could provide some, like, timeline, you know, transition periods for the communication strategy. But functionally, president CEO is responsible for the three other functions of the sales and marketing, ops and finance, which are the three parts of the income statement that should be this, like, that person should be driving those other functions to the cash flow and the equity valuation goals, right? I mean, like, regardless of what title it is,
I
mean, right?
I think about it, they're running the P&L. They own the P&L. So again, whether you call it president or CEO, it doesn't really matter. I think, you know, kind of a good thing to do, I think if you're going through one of these transitions, maybe that owner that's stepping out holds on to the CEO title for a period of time, you know, brings somebody in as a president, and then at some point the owner moves to chair of the board and you make your hired person the CEO. You say, because I think sometimes that can be a benefit to the rest of the market, you know, in terms of who they are, having that title, you know, can help them.
Yeah. Super fast. I want to hear your thoughts on this as we continue. So this Joel Tramiel, I interviewed him on my podcast. He's got this book called The CEO Operating System. It's very fascinating, Mike. And it's like, what is the job of the CEO? And he was dealing with bigger companies, but I think CEO, president, whatever it is, but they're in charge of the income statement. There's a couple comments that I want to make, and I want to hear your thoughts about how you find these type of people and where there's, like, pay ranges, and, like, how do you, like, what are the sliding scales of, like, the ability to find this versus, like, the pay and all that kind of stuff? But he said that, like, a CEO president should have no tasks. And I was like, okay. And he said, you have to be doing things through people to hit the ownership's goals of cash flow, working capital, distributions, and valuation. I was like, oh. He's like, if a CEO has tasks on their list, they're doing something wrong. Or they're not big enough. But essentially, that because, like you had said, if that person, that box is sitting above the other three of sales and marketing, ops and finance, those three buckets are the same buckets in the P&L. So the CEO president should be sitting above, responsible for the whole freaking thing, while each of these other buckets are responsible for the other three buckets of the P&L. And, like, the second part I want to hear your thoughts on is, like, because I always ask, like, you know, on the call this week with my clients, it's like, founder, but all owner operator, right? So it's electrical contractor, nurse, you know, home services, tech, engineer, and no one is a CEO by a trade.
Right. Right.
So then it's like, well, you know, you just go ahead and hire. So if they're in that role above responsible for the P&L, which we all know, right? And they're trying to extract this stuff, but like they're responsible and they're supposed to hire badasses for the other three functions. And they've never had any schooling in finance or sales and marketing. And so like, it's this massive, like, actually, one of my buddies, he said, I just trust people. And I'm like, let's go. And then I get burned. And then it takes me a long time. And so Joel Tremel had said, like, a good executive. So if you're a CEO hiring these other people and or the CEO, okay, we're going to tie this back into like how you figure out how to do this shit, because it's like magic, I think, is that these people, instead of you having to be an expert in their domain, you should ask them for your business. How would they build a plan? And then how would they execute that plan? And then you track their accuracy of it. So you're like assessing their thinking instead of like, how do you do pivot tables as a CFO? Or how, you know what I mean? Like, it's a, so that's a lot, but I think kind of going back to summarize, there's that CEO, president, and then the three other people, and then they're trying to replace those things when you've never had an understanding of this stuff because you just grew a company through gut and opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah. It might be semantics. I don't know about, you know, that a CEO has no tasks, but it might be semantics, but it, you know, I would say
people, do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. I do. Okay. I understand the concept.
Anything for $250,000.
Right. But I think one thing that people miss often is that they don't think of leadership and people development as a task. Or they don't think about it, you know, it's kind of like I'm a great finance guy or I'm a great sales guy and I also lead people. You know, when you're a CEO, your job is to lead people, and you need to be that person that's, you know, breaking down silos, that's getting people working together, that's getting the most out of your leadership team. That is one of your primary tasks. And I think, like I said, I think a lot of people think about it as kind of the secondary thing. I'm great at sales and I also lead people along the way. No, as a CEO, you lead people. I also think, especially in this, in smaller organizations, they are that key strategy person. They have to be the one with the look to the outside of the business. Where else can we play? Where else can we win? What do we, you know, and they need to pull information from their key leadership team members on how they're going to, you know, make changes to continue to grow. And as you get bigger, those bets that you're making get bigger, you know? So a lot of companies, you know, you said engineer, a lot of companies start that way. It's an engineer that, you know, comes up with a new product and takes it to market and finds that they can sell $10 million worth of this product. And then they kind of get stuck there because they're not sure how to, you know, go out to other markets and figure out who else will buy this if we were to just tweak the product somehow or what have you. They don't have that kind of outside perspective. I think for entrepreneurs, they do have a fair amount of that just naturally. And I do think this is kind of a natural skill. I think it's something you're either born with or not, to kind of think about that and think systematically how these things come together. But in bigger companies, you'll find that they actually train people on how to do this. So, you know, you see companies take a product company like a Toro, for example. You know, those people that come up through their product development areas, they learn how to kind of run a product almost like a small business. They might have walk behind lawnmowers or whatever it is. And so they're going to understand the finance piece of that. They're going to understand how we market it. They're going to understand how we sell it. They're going to understand how we build it. Those are the kind of people that, and then they get the training on how to do that. How do we go out and analyze how big our market is? How do we analyze whether customers might buy our product? How do we analyze our competition? They learn how to do those kind of things. Whereas entrepreneurs kind of do that by gut. You know, usually with the entrepreneur, they just sort of try something, and if it works, they keep doing more, and if it doesn't, they do something else. But when you're bigger and it costs you a lot of money to go just try something, you can't really do that anymore. You have to start understanding.
Well, you're moving those resources of your time, money, and energy of the whole ship, and you want to have those calculated bets so that way you don't steer the whole Titanic in the wrong direction.
Correct. So when it comes down to what do we kind of look for in somebody who can come in and run a smaller company, it's somebody that's had that experience where they've led multiple functions in a business and they've actually been responsible for P&L. And And when I say responsible for a P&L, it isn't that they're a finance person. It means that they're responsible for that business. They're responsible for the profit or loss of that business.
It's like, the outcome, right? Like they have the ideas and then they're being judged whether they worked or not based on the income statement and hopefully potentially even the valuation. Because this is where it's so fascinating to me, Mike, because sales is one of those positions. It's so obvious if you succeeded or not. You know what I mean? Hey, Mike, you were hired to be a salesperson and you failed and you're fired because you didn't put up the numbers, where all these other functions become arbitrary, I think. And then if the person's not skilled in that, it's very difficult to assess skilled, not skilled, and what should I be expecting? So as we continue going, how do you find these people and how do you look for them? And how did you get this experience to be able to have this eye for this? Because I think about the values of the peer groups these days is because oh my God, there's other people like me, right? And so a lot of these people feel alone because they don't realize that there are other business owners out there that are thinking strategically that are also putting everything on the line. They don't have visibility into the world of the deep pool of talent like you do to say oh, I know I'm special, but look at this. There's 30 people I could pick from that are 200 grand that actually are trained on this stuff, that could do this stuff. They don't run into those circles too often because then they go navigate or migrate towards the Vistages or the CEO Nexus peer group kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think, it's, how do we do it? I mean, we built the expertise over many years in finding this. And I think you got to start with going out there and figuring out where these people are. And a lot of times you got to dig them out of somewhere else. I mean, they're not just floating around. You know, the best players are working. I mean, the unemployment rate is 4% now, I think. That means 96 out of 100 people are working. And, the best ones are for sure working. So you got to go out and figure out where they're at. And then you got to tell them a compelling story on why they might want to look at moving into a little bit smaller organization. But a lot of times they are open to that because there's a lot of politics in bigger organizations, getting bought and sold and all kinds of different things going on. So a lot of times we find that right person, they would love to come into a smaller company, something they get their arms all the way around, and that they're kind of the person for, that's responsible for growing it. Because a lot of times things are out of their control when they're in a bigger organization. Now, when I say that, I don't mean that, we just go out and recruit people out of big companies and take them to small companies. That's not it either. You have to find the right balance in there. It's usually, what I like to see is somebody who's got some big company experience. So they've gotten some of that training, and then maybe they've moved on to a medium-sized company and been successful there. And then now they're ready to, take the top job in a smaller company.
I want to pull that thread for a second, because I think one of the biggest issues I've seen with people is, hey, this person ran a $50 million division of 3M. That sounds like a great opportunity to run a $20 million manufacturing professional services firm. And then next thing you know, you're like, wait a second. They just submitted an expense report for $15 million to corporate, and then everything's fine and dandy. And this whole thing called inventory, working capital, payables, receivables, it's like, wait a second. Yeah. And that next level in the trenches is harder. But you're totally right. Going back to your original comment when we started the conversation of, you have a $15 million team for a $30 million company. So there's this balance that you probably have some way of assessing.
Yeah. And I think, that's where our expertise honestly comes in, and having interviewed thousands of these people over the years. I mean, it's, in that case, a lot, like you said, somebody might have a $50 million budget at a company, but you got to dig in and figure out, were they really responsible for $50 million P&L, or were they just responsible for $50 million worth of sales? A lot of times in those bigger companies, people will say, I had a P&L. And when you start digging in, you figure out pretty quickly that they didn't have anybody in that report.
They were a contributor, not responsible.
Yeah, they didn't have anybody so they weren't responsible for any of the operations. They weren't responsible for any of the finance. They had a great finance team from corporate that took care of all the finances for them. They didn't really develop the strategy on how they were going to build that $50 million in revenue. They just were given $50 million in revenue and a bunch of salespeople to try and grow that. So that's where you got to really dig in and kind of figure out, where were they in the organization? What was the culture of the organization? Some organizations have big corporate support functions. And then they just, like I said, give somebody the, you know, $50 million worth of sales, here, go grow this. And if you don't, we're going to put you in a special projects role somewhere.
yeah.
You know, and then other companies are more entrepreneurial. They have a division, a $50 million division. They say, go run that. And you're going to have your own plant, and you're going to have your own finance person, your own HR person, and you're responsible for growing that business. And that's a totally different situation, where a person's going to get a lot different kind of experience.
When I think about what I've done over the last 10 years, Mike, so like since having one business, and I was like, this is all I know, to like seeing so many companies and so many financials and so many leadership teams, it's like I the only way I've been trying to describe this to my clients is like, it's like shopping for a house. You don't know the value unless you've done this a bunch of times. And that's what I'm trying to do with business valuations and all this other stuff. But like, what you do is so damn complicated because it's the people cultural thing. You're trying to like match make all, if, uncover people's bullshit that are trying to get a new job for a bunch of pay. And like, and then you're also trying to uncover the owner who's trying to like release their, you know, 30 years of habits, and then assess probably their people that they want to potentially promote before going outside. And they have probably a handicap for some of those people. I mean, how the hell do you do it, man? I just don't. Well, I get it, but I don't know how. Yeah.
I mean, you got to do it in. You got to do it in phases, right? And so that's why, you know, really like when you can start working with an owner a couple years, even now, before they want to be making these kind of transitions, so that we can get a good assessment of their team. You know, sometimes they don't need to hire that president. You know, they just got a real gap in operations or sales or something. And getting a better sales leader is going to be what gets them to where they need to go. Or somewhere else in the organization that where they can either bring in somebody new or develop somebody. And maybe they don't have to hire that president, or at least not right now. Because you have to be realistic, there's financial considerations too. I mean, I know how you work with owners and how you're helping them to ultimately, you know, kind of live their best life and do what they want to do and still earn money from their company through distributions. But sometimes you got to get your company to the point where it can create those distributions,
right,
before, yeah, you can step away. Right. So sometimes it's maybe upgrading or developing some people on the senior leadership team first. And then, you know, and then when you're, you know, get it to a certain point, then bring in a president and then step away. It's just every situation is a little different.
But that's where that assessment of the current situation comes in.
So like, you really gotta know kind of what's the current state, how did we get here, how did we get to this size, and what's the current state of what we have, and then where are we trying to go? And okay, what's the mix of talent that's gonna get us there?
As I was talking to one of my clients yesterday, I'm like I'm just, because we were having this conversation with the three people, I said your name came up a couple times, and like if the owner has done the hard work of like, what the hell do you want? What do you want out of your job? What do you want out of your income through distributions and your target equity valuation and the timeline? We'll know way more with way more clarity. What the hell kind of person do we need? You know what I mean? Like, cause like, how do you do? I mean, I can't, like, it goes back to even the investment bankers, any of these advisors trying to do their job when the owner hasn't sifted through all this stuff, because it's like, okay, well, if we're going to triple the company, that's a different skill set that you need to go find than someone that just wants a 5% growth rate and clip in distributions. Cause like the whole talent org chart will look different and the complexities will be different. And I just think there's so much that has to be put on the owner operator to say, this is what you need. But I guess my point, Mike, is when I looked at these people, I'm like, I'm convinced if you've done this hard work, then having someone like Mike and his team assess where the hell are you in compared to where you want to be is a lot easier to figure that out. And like, if I was listening and going, okay, I've never heard of Mike before. And I like, great. You get paid a pile of money, a third or whatever the hell it is, of these huge salaries. So you're going to have this recommendation. And even though my CEO or COO, who's been with me for 20 years, is capable of doing this, you're going to suggest every time that someone is from the outside. And I know that's not the case, but that's why I'm doing a little bit of tongue in cheek. But like, because like, I think that what you are describing of like, what is the gap of the owner operator, their wishes, then that looking at that CEO, president, and then those three top level functions, your recommendations are sound. But like, how is it that you go about that process, and why you're not going to just suggest that someone pick someone from the third party all the time?
Well, I mean, that's what one thing I'm really excited about with our combined company now with Strategic Talent Partners, because it's always been my mindset that I don't want to place somebody from the outside for, you know, that's going to make a lot of money if you don't need it. I mean, I really look at what we do as being, we're business consultants. We happen to go find people and help you with talent, you know, through the organization, but we're business consultants. We want to help you get to where you're trying to go. And there's been over the years, that's one of the reasons that I partnered so much with Core Talent, the company that I ultimately combined with, because they worked on positions that were, you know, the next layers down of leadership. And so, you know, a lot of times I would, you know, meet with a client that said, I wouldn't need a president. And after I met with him, I said, I don't think that's what you need. I think right now, maybe you're better off hiring a director of operations or something and working your way up to maybe where you need that president. So that's how I, you know, we would work together. I would bring them in to do those kind of things. Now we also have that leadership solutions group where we're actually doing more of the assessments and leadership development and those kind of things too. So we've added in that ability to say, let's figure out what you got on the team. And then let's figure out, you know, if you can develop some people on the team. Cause I still believe, again, most of my career, I've gotten paid for bringing in people from the outside, but I still believe if you can hire from the inside, that's the best way to grow your business because you know that they fit the culture and it's just a lot less expensive to do it that way.
That intrigues the hell out of me because I resonate with what you just said. But then also the question I would have if I was listening is like, okay, how do I do that? Because I just think about my old service director and they were a copier repair person before they were even plugged into the internet. Next thing you know, they're running a $12 million service department. Right, right. And it's because we go fishing every time, every, you know, couple times a year together. Like, it's like, okay, how do, even if they're capable, because I put a lot of value, and I don't know where this fits in your stack ranking of like assessments, but intrinsic motivation, I don't know, like I put so much on that, but then it's like, well, we have to direct that intrinsic motivation to something so they actually know what the hell this job should be done. So like when I think about you, you have all these like templates of what these roles should be and what is slightly above average should be capable of. How do you assess that gap? And then like, where do these people turn to get leveled up?
I'm sorry, I'll do a little bit of a shameless plug here, but one of the things that are, you know, give credit to our leadership solutions, our head of leadership solutions, Rick Rittmaster on this, have built a model that is called the growth leadership model. And it really gets at what you're talking about there about this intrinsic piece. In the EOS world, there's the GWC, get it, want it, and capacity yep. to do it. I think this goes to a whole nother level in looking at that. So you got to have, you know, those for looking for those high potential people, it's partly intrinsic. It's partly their motivation. Do they want to be something more? Are they willing to put in the time and effort to be something more? And then there's some natural things that they have to have too. Like I mentioned before, that strategic thinking ability. I have found that that's just not something that a lot of people have. And so if you don't have the basis of that, this is probably not going to be someone that's going to grow into, you know, president or other senior leader for you if they don't think that way. Now, that doesn't mean that they're not good. A lot of people, you know, are more linear thinkers in terms of they can learn everything there is to know about finance and accounting and learn everything there is to know about sales or marketing or whatever it is, and they can be great functional leaders. But if you can figure out with some of those individuals in your organization that sort of have that natural ability to do that sort of problem solving and connect the dots, that's going to tell you that they have a lot more potential to move up into higher level leadership. So some of the components of this growth leadership are those in terms of how, you know, how thinking about that strategic ability, their thinking ability, their intrinsic. Another piece is, do they really want to lead people? Because again, that is the job of a manager, director, you know, leader. In smaller companies, you're still going to have some tactical things that you need to do, some technical things. But I mean, you know, this is an old adage, but you know, you move your best salesperson into management and they, you know, they fail because they're not.
That was me. Right? I like, it's not an old adage. Like that was my experience. Like I was the guy that went out and killed it in sales, and I'm the visionary and all that stuff. And it's like, Ryan should be your leader. I'm like, what's your leadership coaching, Ryan?
Yeah.
Go pick up the phone.
Right. And certain people are just wired to want to work with other people and lead other people and manage teams, and other people are not. And so figuring that out, you know, with those people, and then building a development plan for them. Okay, what is it that they need then to round out? Is it some skill set things that they need to round out? Some technical things that they do need to learn about their, you know, their functional area? Is it managerial training? Is it some executive coaching, things like that, that can, you know, help them think about their team more and what they're doing for their team? And this is something that, you know, honestly, a lot of entrepreneurs aren't great at. I'm not. I thought I had a better mousetrap as far as how to do recruiting and search. And that's why I built the company. And I never had any experience in leading people or managing others. And so that's something I've had to learn, but I'm still not that great at it. It's still not something that is, and that's why we have a president who is really great at that. That's a BFOQ, bona fide occupational qualification, when you're talking about higher level leadership roles. Do they want to and have the capability of leading people?
Are you guys getting paid to do those assessments and do the training, or both? Or like how do you guys engage throughout that process? Because it makes sense to me.
Yeah, so we have assessments that we use to identify. You know, we actually have a couple of different assessments that we use. One's called the OmniView, another one's called the Preview. It kind of depends on your size of your organization and the role that you're looking at. But typically for those senior leader roles, we're going to be using something called OmniView. It's going to measure kind of their experience, their personality, their competencies, and their cognitive ability, which kind of gets into that strategic thinking piece. But they're just an assessment. I mean, you know, you don't want to ever base a whole decision on just an assessment. The assessment gives you a thumbnail sketch, and then, you know, you need to do interviews and observing behavior and those kind of things too, to make sure, and then build them a development plan to grow into the roles that you need.
And you're helping with that development plan then? Or is it more just an okay?
Yeah, we are. Yeah.
So is it ongoing like training for these people then? So here's my question is like, okay, let's say I engage with you guys and I said, okay, like, I don't want to overcomplicate this, but like it's like maybe there's someone internally that could be leveled up to the present CEO. So that'd be like the first one. But then the natural thing is if my service director or VP of sales or finance or whoever got leveled up and took my spot, we have to backfill them. That's probably one of the best solutions if someone actually has that capability of someone to fill those roles, because it's probably a hell of a lot easier to fill out the next level backfill than to fill that person. But like in that situation then, so you would then help with the CEO president's development plan potentially, and then get paid to or and engaged to actually replace that person's old role.
Correct. Right.
Okay.
Yeah. And we try to look at it holistically. So you might have, you know, with a particular client, we may go in and we're going to assess the leadership team. Maybe somebody then from the leadership team moves up into that president role, and then we see some gaps in the sales side, and that sales leader needs some particular training. The new finance leader needs some different kind of training. You know, the operations person maybe is really good where they are, and they don't need a whole lot more, but they're probably not going to move into something new either. So, you know, it really depends what you got on your team.
I mean, it's a full talent assessment is what you're talking about. It's a team assessment.
Yeah. So you build those development plans as needed. Again, don't want to come in and build development plans for people that don't need them or don't have the desire to move up in the organization. If they don't have that desire, then, you know, there's no reason spending money on training.
I just find it because I have like, and the only reason I have an inkling of what you do is because of how many people I've hired and fired in my life, unfortunately. And I actually said like at one point, I'm like, I actually can see people as a product now, and I don't know if I like that or not. And like, because like you go, okay, well, what should this person and this pay get you? Just like a $500,000 house versus a $1 million house. Like you have an idea of what you're going to get with each of those things. And I know that's kind of where you're at. And I think about how difficult it must be for you to get that across to owner operators because like, how much bullshit is out there, like culture assessments and then the personality assessments and then executive, then there's comp studies, and all of those are just symptoms of an org chart talent problem, right? I mean, like you have like the stuff that you're doing, but like all of those other things I think are symptoms or should be part of the whole team assessment, right? I mean, like how do you sift through that when you're having a conversation with someone?
I think it's just a matter of trying to impress upon them that, you know, we can't we can't get you the right people if we don't know what you've got already and we don't understand your goals and where you're trying to go. I mean, one of the reasons that I created Keystone the way that I did was because my previous, you know, in my previous company, I worked for bigger organizations, publicly traded companies that would tell me, go out and find this IT director and here's your checklist. Go, you know, go find these 10 things. And then you find those 10 things and you place the person in there and they call you a month later and say that this job isn't anything that they describe. You know, it isn't like you told me, it isn't like they told me, you know, and the company's like, well, yeah, maybe we needed something different. So that's why I took this approach of really coming in and really trying to understand the business. Where are you trying to go? What are you trying to accomplish? What do you want for yourself, Mr. and Ms. Owner? And then figuring out what the right talent is to put against that to help take you there.
Because I think I was pretty
harsh. So it's just a matter of, you know, spending enough time with them, hopefully on the front end to impress upon them that, you know, like, and I think it resonates with owners that, look, I don't want you to go spend $300,000 if that's not what you, you know, on a president, if that's not what you need to get your company to the next level, why would you do that?
Because I think, like, you know, the culture assessments, all that stuff is so important, but it's the whole package, right? What are their functions? What are their, like, capabilities? How much are they getting paid? Where are you going? What are your, I mean, all that stuff. It's just the whole, like, yeah, that's why, you know, I think about the people, Mike, that I've been surrounding myself with, like yourself. Like, I just refuse to work with any service providers anymore that don't think like this. It's like, of course someone will go pay you for a culture assessment or this, but it's like, what does that, are you just taking their money because that's what they think that they need? You know what I mean? When it's like, and so it's just like, it's, you know, swimming to the root problem, which is at the end of the day, we all need more cash flow, more equity growth. Well, where are we going? How does the income statement and the overhead and the investment get us there? Who's the team to get us there? And then how is this right fit and all that? I mean, like, it just makes so much sense. And I mean, I think about, like, these are all playbooks or plays right out of the private equity playbook. You know what I mean? They understood these various parts. We're just kind of trying to bring it together down for the privately held owner. And I think about, like, the other skepticism I could be thinking of, you know, and so I'll kind of tee this up, is it's all like the pay of these people is one of the biggest concerns I've had. And hopefully people are listening and it's like, get that out of your head. Like, if we can get visibility that you can make your 20 to 50 grand or whatever it is a month out of your distributions while paying these people, that is like gate number one. And or we have a path to when we can pay these different people without impacting your income. What kind of pay should people be like? And I don't know how to tee up this question, Mike, without giving too much generalizations and putting you in a hard spot, but like between 5 million and 50 million, or like if you break it down in a couple, like how much do these people cost from the president or executive levels? Cause like people go, okay, how much are you paying for your controller? That was one of my questions on one of my calls, like, you know, 110 to 135. Okay. The people will go, oh, that's good. Cause I'm in the middle. You know what I mean? And then there's like the executive. So that maybe question is like, if you can kind of give us like maybe the corners of the puzzle here between size of companies, pays, and the kind of the top C-suite.
Yeah. And it depends on what market of the country you're in, obviously. But I'll just take, you know, here in Minnesota or Minneapolis. And, you know, I say if you're a $10 million year company, let's just start there. And you're, depends a little bit on the industry you're in. But in general, like a $10 million a year company, to go find somebody that's going to be capable of running your company, you're probably talking in the low to mid twos on a base salary. And the reason I say that is because what we're looking for to come in and run the $10 million company is not somebody that's running another $10 million company. We're looking for somebody that's run the $30 million because that's where you want to go. So you're going to pay up a little bit to get more.
Because they're going to pay up because they're coming down to take you where they've been.
Exactly. And so, and the market is really setting the compensation. You know, I'm not setting the compensation for these people. It's the market dictates, and it's pretty amazing actually how close they will be. The market does a good job of setting these. So I'd say in that 10 million range, that's probably where you're at. And you're going to have a bonus, you know, like a yearly bonus for meeting their objectives. Yep. And then you're going to have, you know, the long-term situation too, where you want to share with them some of the delta on your EBITDA.
Yeah, and Craig Rutledge had said that he found that like people around that 240-ish You know, you talk about 30 to 40% base pay as a short-term bonus. So yeah. You're up, you know, you're hitting the 350.
That's right where I would say it's at. You know, I was just
okay.
I said low two. I probably should have said 225 to 250 in that range in base. You know, probably a 30% target bonus. Bonuses, though, I found that owners can get really wigged out about bonuses. And remember, bonuses are only paid if they're doing what you want them to do.
Oh, I covered that for an hour and a half in my previous episode. Like, my kind of, here's where I landed on that, Mike, is Craig and I'm like, okay, so if we got a 100K bonus, we want $50,000 tied to hitting the normalized EBITDA goal, 25 grand hitting the owner's distribution goal, and 25 grand hitting the working capital efficiencies. So that way, like, the owner can go, hey, they're not going to finance it. Cause that's always the back of the mind of like, how do they get that? Well, if I don't have any cash and they like, so it's like, nope, like it's completely tied together of cash flow. And like in the quality is the owner gets their distribution. So you don't get any of it. Unless the owner gets their income. Yeah. And by the way, on the $10 million, what I usually do is $10 million, $1 million normalized EBITDA. I mean, like your major generalization, but you're kind of getting into this bullseye of like, hey, some ranges to talk about. So someone should be able to afford that. And if not, what I suggest with all the material that I'm providing with people is build the freaking forecast so you can see when can I afford that 20 grand a month. Because it's 20 grand a month, right? 20 grand a month. But like you need to be able to make sure that that doesn't impact your distributions or your income. And so there's this sliding scale to say, when can that be possible?
Right.
And then maybe they go to you and say, hey, Mike, I want to do this, but you know what I'd like to do right now is maybe I get some more shit off my plate with a director of ops who's, you know, a little bit less money to elevate me up or whatever it is. So like, I think there's this like ability to move in that direction. When you go to that next level, let's stay on that $10 million mark, that next level of C-suite, of like director of, and again, I don't like, it's tough. I know, because do you have a director of finance or a CFO? I mean, I was paying people 200 plus on my payroll for the fractional CFO services, but you know, there's all this range. So finance, ops, and then like sales, how do you see those pay?
Yeah, they're in that probably 175 to, you know, 210 kind of range. You know, again, base salary. Now for that next level down, then you're probably talking about 20 or 25%, you know, bonus year over year, bonus target. You know, sometimes even less than that, maybe 15 to 25% bonus. And then you do want to tie them in to your long-term plan as well, but the percentages are going to be less there as well.
I'm pulling out a calculator right now because I want to do
What's
175 per month? So one, because like here's what I'm gonna. There's a point to this because I want to talk about like someone buying their time back. So at 240 base, you're 20 grand a month, and like there's a lot of asterisks of you have to be able to afford this, but this is something to work towards, right? So 20 grand a month, and then you're talking three other executives, and probably you probably don't need three people at $175 at that size company.
No, not at a $10 million company. No, you'd probably want to have one of those people that's a little more strategic. You know, a lot of times that's going to be your CFO. You know, you want somebody who's fairly strategic on the financial side who can do the forward look. I mean, that's, you know, when it comes to those type of roles, and people ask me, well, what do you mean by somebody strategic with that next layer down? It's, can they give you the forward look? You know, The great controller can look backwards and say, this is what we did last quarter, and this is how it compares to third quarter last year, and they're very accurate and it all looks right. The CFO can say, here's what it's going to cost us if we go add another location. Here's what it's going to cost us if we add five salespeople, and here's what we can expect for, you know, how many months, years, whatever it's going to take for us to recoup that if we're selling at this rate and those kind of things. So it's that look out the windshield versus the look in the rearview mirror.
How accurate or on track or off track do you think I am with this comment? Is like, had a couple businesses that did that. I'm no longer doing that for a variety of reasons. I have this belief now, Mike, that like after recruiting CFOs for years, like it's hard to find someone that is strategic and can do the math and can do and then have someone be able to afford them. Cause you're yanking them from private equity firms if they got the skill set, and you're a shitload of money. You're 250 if you want to have like, you know, the entry point of this talent. But I think about, so here's my thought is like, if I had $10 million company, where am I going to place my bets with this kind of like the three executives and then the CEO or president? It's like, okay, we got these four people that I'm trying to figure out how to navigate my resources correctly. Yeah. I effectively want to get rid of as much stuff as possible. There might be some some timeline that I have to get to there, but like, I think that a controller that cleans the books up and does actually like clean the stuff up so we can read the data, there's abilities to plug that information in to do some more modeling, whether it's an Excel template or a software or something like that, where you don't have to have that level of man or woman power sitting there where you're so subjective. But like, then would you almost kind of migrate then that cost or that investment towards like the sales? Because like the biggest concern is you hit the throttle of the sales and you break your whole machine because your inventory, your working capital, and all that's all effed up. So it's like, you're tracking kind of my thoughts here?
Yeah. I'll tell you how I kind of do that with clients is we'll talk about their growth plans. Okay. And then I'll say I'll ask the question. So they say, you know, we're $10 million. We want to be $50 million in the next 5 years, whatever it is. Okay. What's holding you back from hitting the 50 million? What are you most worried about for hitting the $50 million?
Yeah, I like that.
Are you most worried that you can't sell enough product? Are you most worried that you can't build it fast enough? Are you most worried that you can't keep track of it and build plans?
Or provide the good or service. Yeah, I like that. Yeah. Right? Yeah.
So that kind of covers the three functional areas. And if they say, you know, our biggest challenge, hey, there's lots of customers out there. We just haven't gotten to them. We know where they are. We just haven't got to them. Okay. Then you want to put that higher level person in the sales seat. You know, if it's, you know, if we can't, gosh, we just can't get stuff out the door fast enough or efficiently or at lowest cost, then we're going to put a little more emphasis on that operations leader. You also want to play that against, you know, when the owner's still there, you want to play that against their skills too. I mean, if they're, you know, really strong on the sales side, then, you know, maybe we get a little less there, a little higher level on operations.
Reconciled against whether they want to keep doing that or not, right?
Yeah, like, right. So like, you're right. The person that you bring in, they should have a pretty holistic set of skills, but everybody is, you know, stronger in one or two areas than they are in others. And so, you want to complement that.
This has been very, I like where we're wrapping up here because I think it's very practical. Like, okay, depending on the owner's level of involvement and what they like doing and not doing and what their skill sets are, you say, okay, now you want to go to 25 hours a week. What are you good at and not good at? And then you ask your question of like, if you were to scale, how would what you want with your time be impacted based on what you'd be worried about on the scale? And then there's probably an argument that with as you do your assessment, you say, okay, here's how these different people are, what your weaknesses or strengths are. And if you only have like this year, you've got the runway of like $20,000 a month. Where do you put it? I mean, I think a lot of times, like, you know, swallowing the golf ball of a $240,000 president CEO for someone's a little tough to begin with when they maybe haven't paid themselves that much or they're finally getting distributions. But it's like, take a step back and say, go put that $175 into the sales manager or director or executive or the, you know, whatever it is. Because if that's their biggest concern and then their biggest concern is lightened up a little bit, then they have a little bit more confidence. And then they should actually make more money to be able to hire the president or CEO.
And maybe that takes, and then that move takes them from the 10 million to 15 or 20. And now at 20 million, now you're thinking about how do we go to 40? And now you're thinking about, okay, now maybe we need that president, or maybe we need to add some more strategic leadership in the other functional areas. As you move up and as you grow, you're going to, you know, if I were to go out and look at the companies that are 200 million, 300 million and up, every role on that senior leadership team should be a strategic leader.
Yeah.
You know, every one of them can give you the forward look in their functional area. This is what we're going to do if we add this many salespeople and we add this many territories.
But you're getting out of the doers, right? That's why you're not going up and hiring them for the 10 million now, because they don't roll up their sleeves to.
Exactly. So as you're going up that ladder, you know, and going from 20 to, or 10 to 20, 20 to 40, you know, you're going to need to add kind of more strategic capability at that leadership team. But then you still have to have that president CEO that's coordinating that, integrating, pulling out the key components of the strategy to keep growing the company.
I know we're close on time here. I don't know if this is one like, you know, typical Ryan question that it could be another 2 hours, but the question that I have is like, I believe that like, as this transition, it's not about exiting, it's about freeing yourself up, having more time, you know, more cash flow, but like, I swear on my life, Mike, that like, if there was a comp plan built out, the owner knew what the hell they wanted and they had all this clarity that we're talking about, how many people are you talking to were like, the potential purchase of the business in a very advantageous way would be enticing for them? Because like, and do these people want to be owners? Because I think about it, like what I've said to you in the past, if someone, if one of my clients can prove that they can make 50 grand a month in distributions, which is a $500,000, you know, and say, okay, well, we want to flip that to a seller's note, senior bank lending at an ESOP, like you could just prove your intrinsic cash flow valuation. And if this person's capable of you, if you do this hard work over the next, you know, 1 to 2 years, they can either keep those distributions or you just flip a switch. And any bank will give that person that you helped recruit, maybe they've only got $500,000 in retirement and can't afford this, but like now an SBA loan will come in and that owner could just like get a decent amount of their money up front.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think when you think about it this way and you keep thinking about, okay, what's that next stage and what do we need for to get to that next stage? And you really kind of build that ratchet idea of growth and into your talent as well as in your finances and your investments and so forth, you're going to have those options so that when you do get to the point where you want to either step back, sell, be out of the business altogether, be in the business, whatever it is where you're going to transition, you've got the most options. And what I see with a lot of owners is they wait too long and then they limit their options. You know, they don't do some of these things and wait until, now I want out and I'm done. I can't take it anymore. So they shop it around and then they're going to get offers from strategics and PE firms and so forth. But those come with a lot of...
Well, they're going to do all the stuff we just discussed.
A lot of strings attached, right?
Yeah, they're going to do all the stuff we just discussed.
Yeah, yeah. And so you're not always getting what you would really ideally want. Maybe you're getting a decent price, but you know, maybe they're going to move the company and you don't want that.
Well, if you don't have this leadership team, they're going to either have to absorb it into the bigger machine or you're going to have a massive earnout while they do all this stuff and they're going to use your cash flow to do the shit that you didn't do anyways. And I think about like, you could flip the switch and you could do an ESOP, you could do a seller's note, but like all these different things. But I think about how many of these people that you're recruiting at this 240, if the ownership carrot was potentially there, could you change the basket of people you're picking from? Are these people want to be owners? Or like, how does that, what's
that's
the
a great question. Mindset? And to be honest with you, I'd say the majority of them don't necessarily either want or have the capability to be owners. They want a piece of the pie. So
5 to 10%, whatever it is.
Yeah, more often that's what I'll see is that they, you know, because they're not usually entrepreneurs. So they're too smart. They don't want to take that risk.
Hey,
they don't want to buy
it. By the way, we're going to give this guy, I mean, why, we're going to personally guarantee your investments, your house. And it's like, wait a second, I can make 240 without doing that.
And if they do a good job, it should be at the size and profitability where it's going to be hard for them to buy. So, yeah,
well, but to your point, and like, then you could do an ESOP. You could like, where like, there's just other, like any private equity firm will come buy it. I mean, you just increase all your options. And Mike, like as we get to the home plate here is I think you said something that's really important that you and I have both been talking about for years, which is, I think the word exit is so dysfunctional and so much of a mind game where like, cause people go, well, I don't want to exit, so I'm not going to do any of this stuff. And then it's like, I want to exit. And it's like, well, you didn't do any of this stuff. So like, there's this whole, I think it's so dysfunctional. Yeah. It's like, well, like if we have an ownership in an asset and we grow cash flow valuation and cash flow and the equity valuation, you can do whatever the hell you want.
Yeah.
You don't have to like exit and like, well, like, I don't know. I just think it's so fascinating because I think you're running into similar things in the marketplace where there's these words that people use and people don't even know what each other are talking about.
I like to think about it this way. And a lot of owners, I think, you know, resonate with this is that, you got a couple choices. You can sell it, take the cash, and then go invest that somewhere and try to, you know, make money on your investments. Or you can keep it and invest in yourself. And what do you know better? You know, you invest in the company that you built and just make sure you get the right people in there to run it. And then you can treat it like kind of like an ATM, right? You're taking investing in your own company and you know that industry, you know that company, you know more about that than anybody else. So seems like a smarter investment than taking a chunk of change and going out in the stock market.
Well, it's so fascinating. I think, so in Joe Brown's interview that it was a few episodes prior to this one, he actually went through the decision tree of like, if you got a, like that kind of cash flow in a $10 million company, he goes, treasuries, cash, real estate, stocks. And he goes through the whole thing about where you can get like, and he's like, you just can't get income like that. So if you have got a good business, your better return is to hire the, as long as you can cash flow your life by hiring someone through you, your investment in your portfolio should, I mean, like this is where all the smart money's going. It's like, why wouldn't we think about like, hey, like there's something here. If everybody else wants my company, maybe I should think about how and why they want my company, especially to your point. This is what you know, and it's that letting go of control. I think that you give people hope because there's a process that's not just a guess to make it all work. So I, more power to you, Mike. I think you're doing a noble work, and I love what you guys are doing. So I'm just so grateful to have you on the show.
Thanks, Ryan. I appreciate the chance to be here. And hopefully I answered all your questions, or most anyway.
Probably not. We'd be here for a couple of years, yeah, a couple more days, and no one would be listening. So, but where can people find you?
So yeah, you can find me at our website is strategictalentpartners.com. My email is mfrummelt@strategictalentpartners.com. It's kind of a long one, but mfrummelt@strategictalentpartners.com.
We'll have those links in the show notes. Yeah, reach out to me
anytime. I love just chatting with business owners, and it doesn't have to be that you're ready to get started or ready to do a search or hire a president. Just, I love talking to business owners kind of about where they're at and where they're trying to go. So,
and you're coming in the ownership accelerator with my clients who are going to be hopefully listening to this prior. So we'll be able to pick this up where you left off. So I am so grateful, Mike, for you coming on the show.
Thanks, Ryan. It's great to be here.
I hope you found that conversation valuable. I hope it gives you hope, because if you can afford the pay, this shouldn't be an obstacle, is finding the person, because Mike's team and Mike's process really breeds the success that he's talking about. I've seen it firsthand with some of my clients, and it's that feeling of when you find that house where you just know it's the right fit because you've looked at all the different other options and it just makes sense. That's the experience that Mike brings to you, and it helps you break down all the barriers of like, is it possible to replace yourself? What about my internal people? Are there other people outside of it? I mean, the compensation, the pay is one thing. And again, if you haven't checked out Craig Rutledge's episode with me, definitely check that out. But I highly recommend checking out Mike and Strategic Talent Associates' website, because they do a great job and they're willing to have conversations and they're willing to take the step-by-step process to help you feel comfortable. And if you want to check out Mike's previous episodes with me, go to my YouTube channel, go subscribe. And I just want to thank everybody for tuning in. We have a lot of fun episodes coming into play. We got a conversation with Brandon Hall about valuations. So stay tuned, and I thank you again.